Hello and welcome to Monocle on Culture. I'm Robert Bounds. The mystery surrounding the world and the words of the spy are supposedly unshrouded in a new revealing documentary about the English novelist John le Carré. The film is The Pigeon Tunnel, created by legendary auteur Errol Morris, known amongst many other things for the groundbreaking 1988 documentary The Thin Blue Line. The Pigeon Tunnel captures le Carré's final interview. Together with archive footage, movie clips and fresh dramatisations, it's an intimate portrait of the writer and his relationships with his father, his work and with the truth. Le Carré himself described truth as the writer's instrument, his task to make it sing. Well, we'll be looking into the veracity of these so-called songs, their relation to the tricky notion of fact, and whether getting to the idea of a deep truth actually matters, either in the pages of a novel or in an interview with its author. On today's show, I'll be speaking with the brilliant Errol Morris about the creation of his film, The Pigeon Tunnel, and then friend of the programme, John Mitchinson, joins me to explore the work and legacy of John le Carré. First up, here's my conversation with Errol Morris. Errol, thank you very much for your time today. And congratulations on The Pigeon Tunnel.
Thank you very much.
John le Carré seems to have, he must have some slipperiness built in. He's a difficult person possibly to interview. You didn't find that by the look of it from the movie.
I don't think I did. Maybe I'm completely self-deceived.
But someone like le Carré that was at a point in his career so good at asking questions of people, gaining people's confidence, does that set up a film about such a character as a trickier proposition than some others, perhaps?
I don't really think so. I mean, he is, you know, unfortunately for all of us, a member of that really benighted species, Homo sapiens. Never trust one of them. But he's one of the few people that I have ever interviewed who is constantly telling you that everything he says may be a lie, everything may be untrue, and not always by design. As he points out, memory is a fickle, strange kind of thing. We withhold even from ourselves, and we forget. And we lied, and we change. An essay on, if you like, not truth, but untruth. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It seems that you had a very good rapport with John le Carré in the film.
He tolerated me.
Was that the way that it ends up, the way that you've edited it together? I wonder how edited together it is, or how... whether it's largely chronological, because there is a great warmth between you, certainly at the end of that, end of the film, Errol. So how chronological is it?
It's edited. Of course it's mm-hmm. edited, mm-hmm. but it is chronological in the sense that any of this stuff is chronological. One of the interesting things about the Pigeon Tunnel, at least for me, is how chaotic it is. It's not a linear narrative. It's a strange mosaic of different stories, parables, themes, sometimes stitched together, just sometimes thrown together, higgledy-piggledy. So the movie, both the graphics and the movie itself, try to capture that quality of the original work, I hope,
yeah,
successfully.
Well, you do that, and we should tell listeners that bears itself out in the way that you've reconstructed scenes, the way that you use mirrors and sort of, as you say, shattered images and mosaics on screen as well to dramatic effect. Did you click on that, I mean, pretty soon after starting that visual style, pretty soon after talking with le Carré for the film?
In part, yes, but part of making a movie is realizing it, making it become something rather than nothing. And it's a long, sometimes arduous road. David had commissioned a biography by Adam Sisman. And the biography appeared, and he didn't like it. am perhaps speaking out of turn, but I believe he thought this is just too ordinary, this is too pedestrian. And then he wrote The Pigeon Tunnel in response. And The Pigeon Tunnel is anything but that. It's all mixed up. There are chapters half a page long. There are chapters that are 40, 50 pages long. It isn't in any really strict chronological order at all. And yet it works. It's my favorite of his books. I think right. It's great.
And I guess it has that quality of memory where there are some things that might be hugely, might have impacted who you are today. And it might have happened to you when you were a child, but you can only remember the gloved hand, perhaps, of the mother or something. And so that's the short chapter. And something hugely long might be a professional area of your life of which you perhaps have less interest these days. It's the nature of memory itself.
Yes. I think it's his finest book, still do. When I read it, I really loved it and still love it. So go figure. I made a movie about it.
You like the, well, you, maybe you like the fact more than the fiction, but that's something there. And there's something between the two, I suppose, between his fiction books and this book of reminiscences.
There's something in all of his literature. I mean, we have this desire to carve up the world in some neat set of chunks, documentary, drama, blah, blah, blah. I have always seen myself as combining all kinds of elements of cinema. Call it the kitchen sink approach. There's a little bit of this and a little bit of that. There's certainly a little bit of drama. The visuals, whether the realization of the story of the pigeon tunnel or Rudolf Hess's flight from the Third Reich to Scotland. These are movie scenes, strictly speaking. They're actors. It's shot like a movie. So I don't think there really is anything quite like this film. At least I hope not.
No, indeed, there isn't. No, it's a wonderful thing. The reconstructions that you have made for The Pigeon Tunnel, mixed with some of the classic movies and BBC TV series, yes, largely, from the 60s to the 90s,
I suppose. I keep telling people, just quite recently, that, you know, don't see the remake of Tinker Tailor. It's not that good. Alec Guinness.
Come on, exactly. That's smiling.
One of the greatest performances, whether it's television or film, I don't really care. It's Alec Guinness, and Alec Guinness is absolutely fabulous.
And so unknowable. He's so perfect as George Smiley.
No, he's great.
Yeah.
Truly great.
And I wondered, in terms of the rest of the films you've made, Errol, this, we're talking largely about the Cold War with David Cornwell, with John le Carré and his reminiscences thereof.
Yes.
What most of your films,
well, think of it,
that have dealt with that have been more on the cold end than the hot end of it. Because it's about, is that fair to say?
David found himself in Bonn in 1960, 61. It's just the Cold War is really quickly becoming something less frigid. He's right there as these tensions boil over. The wall goes up in Berlin. And he writes a novel. It becomes actually a paradigm, if you like, for his work. This odd connection of history, personal biography, literature. He writes this book, really, that incorporates the Berlin Wall into his storytelling. And it's great. It's a model for so much that he did in his fiction. But his fiction is a strange hybrid of documentary material, pure invention and fact.
You get some amazing, you get some zingers from him in this film as well.
Well, I hope so.
I mean, yeah. And those are things that clearly aren't in the book. There are parts of, as you say, the movie follows some of the trajectory of the pigeon tunnel, the book, in terms of it goes back and forth and it comes in and out like a sea. You never quite know where you are, and yet you managed to get him to, well, he says near the end that he wanted this to be definitive. There is a sense that he has opened himself up to you and your camera. Did it feel like that at the end of the editing process? Now you watch the film back.
It felt like I got something. There's a line I've always liked. I think she might even be a British writer, Virginia Woolf.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote, they call it an experimental novel. I guess that's what it is, The Waves. And she has this recurring phrase, netting a fin in a waste of water. Whatever in hell that means. For me, it's always meant trying to find something which is elusive, perhaps ineluctable, in a sea of words, a sea of ideas. Interviewing David Cornwell, John le Carré, is daunting. Can't really describe it otherwise. And trying to penetrate into something beyond what we have just traditionally seen. I'm asked endlessly by interviewers, by the way, and you have not done that, for which I commend you.
What haven't I asked you?
What? Well, there's still time. The whole story is about betrayal. Yes, betrayal is part of the story. It's part of the story of any kind of spy, or particularly any kind of double agent. But it goes well beyond betrayal to a contemplation of what is history, what is truth, what is memory. And we were able to touch on a lot of these themes in an interesting and powerful way. I like the film. I usually despise what I do. And maybe I hate this a little bit, but it might even be an okay film. What do I know? I'm not.
It's a pretty good film, Aaron
Fortunately,
Morris.
I don't have to judge it really.
But this must call into. I felt watching it that I'm asking you questions about asking questions in this film to a man who used to ask questions when he was. So we're in some hall of crazy mirrors anyway. But very early on in the Pigeon Tunnel, your film, I felt that. I was in a film, a documentary also about documentaries, about veracity, about truth-telling and the limits thereof.
I like that. I go along with that happily.
I mean, did you happily, I'm sure you don't get into any project feeling that you're going to catch the whole fish. Perhaps you're going to catch that fin in the wake of water. But I wondered with this one whether you were happy to be a little bit more laissez-faire with how it ended up or with the subject, because that subject, even his fins are slippery.
Well, people would ask me, do you feel you got everything? There's a simple answer to that. Of course I didn't. What are you talking about? You never get everything. In fact, you usually get nothing. I got something for which I'm grateful, and something that I keep thinking about. I watched the film again at the NFT. I assume it was the NFT. Maybe I just don't even know where I am anymore.
The big concrete guy down there.
That's it. Thank you.
Yeah.
And at the beginning, he's asking me all sorts of crazy questions. I mean, that is a question. Who are you?
That's the first question, which I didn't want to.
Who are you? Well, sir, I'm not sure I can answer that question because I don't know who I am. I'm still desperately trying to figure that one out. And we started talking about interviews and interrogations, which admittedly tripped me up. If he tells me that interviews and interrogations are one and the same, I think, are they? Am I confused here? Am I in a state of horrific delusion? And I keep thinking about it. And then he adds to it that it's about the detection of the lie. Okay. Well, not for me. It really isn't. I don't go into an interview looking for, oh, that's it. That's the lie. Bingo. Way to go. Mr. Morris, you detected the lie.
Gotcha.
Gotcha. I don't do that. I don't think I have ever done that. There are times I make a movie in Dallas about a miscarriage of justice, The Thin Blue Line. Mm. And yes, in a case like that, my entire focus is on the truth and what happened in the real world. As Philip K. Dick so wisely said, reality is that which does not go away when you cease to believe in it. It lingers on. It remains. And so truth, when you're talking about the killing of a Dallas police officer, is central. It's the whole deal, the whole ball of wax. Here, the issue is different. You're asking a man to reflect on his own personality, his own work. It's not what other people think of John le Carré. It's what John le Carré thinks of John le Carré. You're doubling back on itself. You're left with a man who's endlessly questioning himself, his own motives, his own memories, his own perception of reality. Call it a metafilm. If you were really nasty, you could call it a metafilm and slap me in the face with that fact.
Don't put words in our mouth, Errol. It feels like that, though. It's satisfying because of its subtlety, because we're watching a man try to explain himself. And I think the matter of estimation comes into this as well. You're making a film. You're asking the questions. You've set up the camera. You're talking as equals at each of your crafts. And I think there's something necessary and important about that in the film as well. There's something it seemed to me that there was something necessary and important in that film.
Oh.
And just finally, is there something of the mirror in it? When do you watch this back and see something of yourself when you ask these questions and you talk about versions of the truth and how much varnish there is on things?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
The graphics, which I love. Mm. We have just such an extraordinary team of people. I'm the weak link. Fantastic graphics, fantastic photography, fantastic editing, fantastic music, and on and on and on. But yes, a lot of it tries to call attention perhaps to the fragmentary nature of memory and consciousness. Sounds too pretentious, and I'm really sad I even said that, but it's too late now.
Errol Morris, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
And now to a regular voice here on Monocle on Culture. John Mitchinson is co-founder of Unbound Publishers and co-host of the Backlisted podcast. I caught up with John to discuss the film and truth as one of its central themes, as well as Le Carré's wider work. I began by asking John whether Le Carré's novels are transparent things or more like multi-layered exercises in evasion.
I mean, I think you're going to have to, with Le Carré, the master, really, of deception and betrayal. I found Errol Morris's interview, the documentary, it was completely spellbinding, I thought. And partly because of the sense of Le Carré performing. You know, he is impossible, I think, finally to pin down. And going back to your original question, how much of himself does he put into the novels? Well, he kind of says that, doesn't he? He says that in the interview. He puts a tremendous amount of himself into the novels. But, you know, part of the reason of writing, I was really struck by, at the end of the film, he says, "I love writing." There's so many writers who don't, you know, so many writers who bellyache about how difficult it is. And you feel, yeah, what you feel with Le Carré is he creates these intricate, he weaves these intricate kind of, there's a theme through the book of the film, of the pigeon tunnel, but also creating these spaces within which he can explore really, I think, quite profound ideas about the nature of truth and honesty. And you feel that he plunders his own life. And, you know, some of the books are more autobiographical than others. The Perfect Spy is probably the one, which I love, and I think probably my favourite of all his books, that is most closely based on his own pretty remarkable autobiography. You know, mother leaving when he was 5, an absolute swindler. I mean, another performer, right? A performer. His dad was a performer. And he's very interesting about whether or not his dad believed, and he said that he believed in the performances as he was giving them. rather as you watch Le Carré talking about his life, thinking, well, he seems to be believing in his own performance, but leaving you in absolutely no doubt that you're not getting to the truth.
Yes, in the film, in this examination of Le Carré, we don't quite get to the bottom of things, but we do have quite a lot of fun not quite getting there. It's rare, isn't it, to see Le Carré on screen giving such an exemplary performance of John Le Carré.
So, a man famous for not doing that, you know, a man famous for not giving interviews and not going on the record. So,
and in terms of his novels turning into films and TV series, I mean, we read books probably every day and can see some of them as thinly disguised film pitches. But what about Le Carré's work, John? I mean, for me, they're utter novels, but then they make brilliant TV and film adaptations. But what about for you? Do they seem easily adapted, or can you see the nails and the rigging and the glue showing through?
Well, he's writing about stuff which is kind of intrinsically interesting. I was very struck in the film the way he defined his work against that of Ian Fleming and James Bond, and the kind of, so the two things that for me are always satisfying about his best work. I mean, I don't think all his novels work as well as the classic novels. Spy Came In From the Cold, and as I say, Perfect Spy, is that he really understands the world of, you know, he was himself, you know, he was himself a kind of a, you know, a junior spy, MI5 and MI6. So he knows, he's very good at all the details, and the plots of his books are always kind of, I think, pretty satisfying. But where I think Le Carré moves into something that is much more interesting is in the characters. I mean, the character, there is always a Le Carré type character at the heart of the book who is struggling with a kind of moral dilemma. You know, that you get the sense, I think it's hard for us to remember quite how grim the Cold War was, quite how real the Cold War was. There's a moving bit in the film where he talks about his friend from Oxford who he turns into the Secret Service for being a communist. And he tells the story in quite a cold way, in quite a rational way. But you feel always in Le Carré, boiling under the surface is this kind of shame, betrayal, guilt, being, as he says right at the beginning of the film, from the wrong class and having to pass as an upper class Englishman. So the, you know, beyond all the tricks of the novelist trade, keeping you turning the pages, and I think he is closer to Sartre and Camus, honestly. I think he's a great existential writer. And I think there's a brilliant line Errol Morris says to him, "I see you as an exquisite poet of self-hatred." Le Carré agrees with him and says, "Yes, I think I probably am." And you think, yeah, he's, this to me is really, I think, really great fiction. As I get older, I admire his classic books more. And I, you know, watching the film just made me want to go back and reread them.
In the lore of fiction, we can often be snobby. Reviewers can be snobby about genre as opposed to pure literary fiction. A, should those category divisions exist and be factors for us to judge on quality? And B, does Le Carré's work supersede both his genre and just click straight through into literary fiction, I wonder?
I would say that it's, we're living through strange times, and I would say that, you know, in a funny kind of way now, genre fiction is, there was definitely for a long, long time, you know, the controversies about why do crime writers not end up on the Booker shortlist, and why is Le Carré was probably the most of all of those writers, the one who had most reason to feel aggrieved, because as I've said, I think his books are, as a sort of genre, I mean, you know, it had its heyday, didn't it, in the 60s and 70s, Len Dayton, and maybe even Frederick Forsyth and Ludlum. I kind of feel now that the history's changed and you've got much more sort of, you know, techno thrillers, and there are a lot of, I love Mick Herron's writing, I think he's kind of in that tradition. But I think now that if anything's struggling for sort of attention, it's probably literary fiction, you know, that it feels to me like the prize shortlists are much less kind of exciting moments for people to discuss with the novel than they used to be. And there's a lot of crossover sort of literary stuff that is actually appears to be quite generic. It's kind of one of the reasons why I think, will Le Carré be read in years to come? I think yes, but he'll be read because, one, he so totally owned that moment, that sort of 50s, 60s. The great betrayals, you know, Philby makes an appearance in the film. So he was kind of a great documentarian of his time. But also, as I've said before, because the characters in his books become no less interesting to us, because human nature is you know, that thing of the empty, finding the empty room, and like the sort of, you know, the Wizard of Oz, that in the secret cabinet in the heart of Whitehall, they find a pair of trousers. You know, it's like Rudolph has his trousers. It's sort of ridiculous and absurd. He's just in some way, I think, Le Carré, his writing is so lean and so, I mean, I'm guessing that he probably did at times feel that he had been neglected and ought to have been more respected, but he had the money in the bank, as it were. And he also seemed like a guy who was really struggling with his own stuff. I mean, one of the things we haven't mentioned is, you know, the revelations about his womanizing, which he won't go into in the film. And Errol Morris says, like, people keep telling me I should be pushing you. And one of the things I like about Morris is that he doesn't turn it into a pantomime of you said and she said. But you know, Le Carré, a very complicated, not altogether nice human being. And I'm always struck by this, Rob. You know, we talk to a lot of writers. Why is it that we expect writers, given what they do, which is basically pretend to be other people and make shit up, why do we expect them to be nice people?
Exactly. And you might say for this film, from an authorised biography, as it were, it has a lot of the flavour of an unauthorised one, despite some of those missing love life revelations.
Yeah, and obviously Adam Sisman, but Le Carré's biography, who wrote a very admiring biography in 2015 and then has had to go back and revise it all, and the sense of his betrayal. And it's like the word betrayal with Le Carré comes over and over and over again. Fascinating. And so I think spy fiction, you know, is not what he'll always be the great spy writer, but I hope and expect that his reputation will far outlast whatever happens to the genre that kind of he has defined.
John Mitchinson there. And that is all for this week. My thanks to John and to Errol Morris. The Pigeon Tunnel is available now to watch on Apple TV+. Monocle on Culture is produced by Sophie Monaghan-Coombs and Steph Chungu, and Steph also edits the show. We'll be back at the same time next week, but until then, from me, Robert Bounds, thank you for tuning in.